I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today's show, Barbecue Pitmasters. Barbecue fans, this show's for you. This month, we take a spicy, sweet, saucy, smoking good look at the history, art, science, and passion for barbecue in our Southern society and beyond.
Barbecue chicken, barbecue lamb, barbecue beef, barbecue hound. When you fix a table for me, make it plain barbecue, sweet as can be. Tell me, little mama, who you give my barbecue to?
My guests today are James Beard award-winning chef, Emmy Quattrano, the always colorful Beer Town columnist and writer for the AJC, Bob Townsend, and Jim Ockmoody, an author with an affinity and ancestry for barbecue.
Who'd you give my barbecue to?
Okay, this is Jim Ockmoody. I'm an author and writer here in Atlanta. I was a reporter at the Journal Constitution for 30 years. Did a lot of food writing, about probably my favorite food topic, barbecue. Right now, I'm working on a book about the history of barbecue for the University of Georgia Press. And I've got barbecue in my blood going way, way back. On my mother's side, they come from Middle Georgia, down near between Milledgeville and Augusta, and they ran a slaughterhouse down there, made hot country sausage and did whole hog barbecues for years. So I've got it on that side. On my father's side, I come from a long line of pit masters. My grandfather used to do the barbecue for a farmer's club up in Bartow County, where my daddy's side of the family's from. He was written up in the Saturday Evening Post once in 1954. They referred to him as Barbecue Chef Robert Ockmoody.
That's definitely a badge of honor.
Oh, of course it's a badge of honor. So it's something that I've been acutely aware of all my life. It's a great Southern tradition and one that's I've got it on both sides of my family.
Well, before you get to like that level of esteem and professionalism, just talking about kind of the backyard barbecue, and I know that there is a real distinction.
Barbecues in the United States were really more of an event, a big social happening, a community gathering, a church barbecue. That was really what the sense of the word was up until, I would say, around World War II. It was after that that it became a more universal term. It became popular in other parts of the United States and started referring to these backyard grilling and backyard smoking. And a lot of that actually didn't come out of the South. A lot of that came out of the West. The first publication that really pushed the idea of a barbecue as a social gathering that you could do in the backyard was Sunset Magazine from California. There's beautiful illustrations from Sunset in the 1930s showing how to build a brick barbecue in your backyard, whereas at that time in the South it was still something that basically people dug a trench and cooked a pig or a goat or something, you know.
And so barbecue as, you know, for restaurants, when did that start?
Barbecue restaurants actually started pretty early. They started back in the very early 1900s, and there are a few of them that actually go back to the late 1800s. Some of the first fast food restaurants in America, franchise restaurants, were barbecue. Barbecue was actually a popular roadside eating thing before hamburgers were. Some of the earliest, the Pig Stand out of Texas was an early franchise operation. There's still a handful of those. They were buildings that were shaped like pigs. And, you know, you actually found those in the teens and the 20s before you started having hamburger stands.
With some barbecue, swinging with the band, like the happy people do way down in Dixieland. Hear that old trombone and the trumpet ad lib. Love to hear a lick while I do my picking. picking on a juicy rib, 'cause I'm strutting with some barbecue.
Back in the 20s and 30s, barbecue in certain circles was slang for an attractive woman, as in a tasty piece of meat. And that's the sense. There's one of the better known songs that Louis Armstrong ever recorded called Strutting with Some Barbecue. And he's not talking about strutting with a rack of ribs, he's talking about strutting with a rack.
And I go strut, 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 strut with some barbecue.
Very cool. Well, you'd asked me on the way in who else was going to be on this show. And it probably will not surprise you to know that Bob Townsend is also a guest, talking a lot about the beer and kind of the pairing of beer and barbecue. And then a little bit surprising even to her.
I mean, like even this, I'm like, barbecue, why me?
Annie Quattrano. As a guest on this show, and really to kind of talk about purveying and the actual pig before it becomes the barbecue.
Barbecue, because it is so based on that whole animal, there's a lot of factors that enter into it that make for good or not so good barbecue. And I think it all starts really with how the animals are raised, what they're fed, how they're cared for. There's reasons that commodity pork and commodity beef have gotten a bad rep. The meat doesn't taste as good. And often it doesn't just not taste as good. Sometimes it doesn't taste at all because the animals have been bred in a way that they grow very, very fast and they have little intramuscular fat. And these are intentional breedouts. They want them to grow fast. They want the pigs to be extra long because extra long means an extra long loin, which is the most valuable part of the pig, as in dollars, gets the most dollars per pound. And people didn't want fat for a long time. And I think fat is now a little bit has gotten a bad rep. I think now it's a little more acceptable because they're finding that maybe animal fat, which our ancestors used for all cooking, is really less harmful to you than some of the modified oils that are used today. But the breeding is really important. What they're fed and where they live is really important. And it's really important where they're and how they are slaughtered. Because there's enzymes in the animal that can react to situations that are stressful prior to the harvest. Let's call it harvest. That's a nice
Thank
word.
You.
So anyhow, what happens is when these adrenaline are released, and it can taint the taste of the meat. I've gotten hogs before that have this intermuscular and bleeding that usually means that in some way they were harmed right before their harvest. So, yeah, I think that it's really important to know where your meat comes from. And I think that the quality of the barbecue, it depends on it in a lot of ways. And there's so many of these small barbecue houses here in Atlanta that really do things right. There's even some large ones. I know one large barbecue group, actually they have stores all over the South, and they're actually producing their own hogs now. I mean, they've gone that far, which, you know, is extremely costly, but it's because they understand that this meat is the most important commodity to them.
There'll be no moaning or kicking, but there'll be cornbread and fried chicken. There'll be no picking cotton. Cotton will be forgotten at the Alabama barbecue. There'll be no high preaching or praying, but there'll be some swinging and swaying. There'll be no baptizing, but there'll be harmonizing at the Alabama barbecue. Keep the banjo strumming.
Did Annie talk about the Georgia tradition of barbecued possum?
I'm not sure. You're not recording this, are you? No, she didn't tell me about it.
Well, one of the things that you find out about food history is, of course, if you go, the farther back you go, the more meats were considered acceptable to have at a polite table. And if you go back to the early 1900s or late 1800s, Americans ate a lot of different types of meat that we all go, now. And one of the meats that was very common to barbecue back then was possum.
I mean, that's disgusting.
Well, it is disgusting, and I've never tasted possum, although I've written about it. But I'm going to tell you just how mainstream it was. 100 years ago, when William Howard Taft got elected president of the United States in 1908, he was spending part of the winter in the South, I think over in the, like in the horse country in South Carolina and Augusta, over in that area. He came by Atlanta in the winter of 1909 as the president-elect, and the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce had a big dinner downtown for him, and the main event, they had a lot of different things, but the main event was barbecued possum.
My God.
And there was all this publicity in the Journal and Constitution about the great search all through South Georgia to find the perfect succulent possum for the president-elect.
Did it go over well?
Well, it got a lot of publicity. It went over well. They've got menus from the banquet at the Atlanta History Center. It was like a really a big event. But if you go back and read the coverage, William Howard Taft, who was from Cincinnati, and I'm sure had never tasted a possum before, although we obviously know that he liked to eat, he was telling the reporters things like, well, that certainly was interesting.
I understand that barbecue and presidential politics have a pretty rich history together.
Oh, yeah, they do. Barbecues were the traditional thing to pull together a crowd. Barbecues and free liquor were the traditional thing to pull a crowd in. And it's particularly associated with the South, but it was all over the country. I mean, you had in the Midwest, there were a lot of great barbecues, and there were a lot of campaigns in the early 1800s where there were huge barbecues. And there are political references going way, way back. George Washington mentions going to barbecues in his diary. I think Abraham Lincoln's father was it. There's a record of him being at a barbecue in Kentucky one time. So really, barbecues were huge events all over the frontier. And you know, when Franklin Roosevelt was spending time in Georgia at Warm Springs, that was one of the things he really liked. Barbecue. It was just part of the culture here.
Barbecue is bipartisan, right?
It is bipartisan. But I was going to tell you, this whole idea of presidential barbecue goes way, way back. I mean, Lyndon Johnson was probably more associated with barbecues than any other president. He had huge barbecues at his ranch in Texas. I toured his ranch a couple of years ago when I was there doing a swing through the heart of Texas barbecue country, and there's actually a pretty sad story associated with it. The day that Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, he was headed to the airport after his speaking engagement. He was headed to the airport to go to the LBJ ranch to attend a huge barbecue the next day. They had everything laid out for this big barbecue. He was going to stay at the Johnson house there at the ranch. And when they got the call down there that something awful's happened, barbecue canceled, and they gave the food all away because obviously there was no need for it then.
Yeah. Was it your family history and heritage that got you interested in barbecue, or just the taste, or how'd you get hooked?
Well, I mean, I always liked it, and I've always been interested in history and food as a different window into history. So if you're in Atlanta, Georgia, and you have those interests, barbecue is something that you're going to like. But yeah, I grew up hearing those family stories. And I mean, when I was growing up in Decatur, one of our prize family heirlooms was actually a copy of that 1954 Saturday Evening Post. I'm quite certain that before I got into journalism, it was the only time the name Achmuty ever appeared in a national publication. And my father had a copy of that, and we were just all so proud of it. And so, yeah, I was very aware that my family, going back there, my great-grandfather, my namesake, James Ockmoody up in Eu Harley in Bartow County in the late 1800s. He was known as the guy who made the Brunswick stew for all the community gatherings up there. And I've written this in the paper before, but we don't have a picture of him, but we have his stew recipe. And I think we might have the better thing.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Barbecue Pitmasters, brought to you by Perkins & Will. Hailing from a long line of Georgia pitmasters and Brunswick stew makers is one of our favorite return guests, journalist and author Jim Ockmoody. Jim's stories have won awards from the James Beard Foundation and the Association of Food Journalists, and he's also co-authored two cookbooks, one which is about barbecue sauces and rubs. He's currently working on an illustrated history of barbecue in conjunction with a traveling exhibition at the Atlanta History Center.
You're clearly a very well-versed barbecue expert. How do you go into a place and say, yeah, this is really great?
Well, I mean, there are things that you look for. If I were eating ribs, I would want the ribs. You know, people sometimes talk about fall off the bone ribs. That's the last thing I want my ribs to do, is to fall off the bone, because it means they've either been overcooked or probably means they've been parboiled, which is not a good thing. A lot of the restaurants that do ribs, at least they used to, they'll parboil on them and then finish them on a grill and get some smoke into them. And parboiling ribs actually takes out a lot of the flavor. So good ribs, you actually want them to stick to the bone a little bit. You actually want to be able to gnaw at them a little bit. And everybody knows anything about barbecue knows that you want a little pink smoke ring on it, showing that it's actually been exposed to smoke. If it doesn't have that, if your ribs are uniformly gray, then they've probably not been smoked, and therefore they might be tasty, but they're not barbecue.
Let's talk a little bit about your book. Tell us a little bit about it and kind of what you hope to encompass in there.
Well, the reason for the book is that the Atlanta History Center is doing an exhibition about the history and culture of barbecue that's supposed to travel around the country to different museums. And this is going to be a companion book with that. And it is an illustrated history of barbecue, which means that about half of it is going to be text. And about half of it is going to be...
I'll be a reader.
...photos illustrations. And there's a really great wealth of barbecue art. Old postcards, paintings that people have done, album covers, menus, Library of Congress photos, a lot of things that I've taken just traveling around to Kansas City and Memphis and Texas, where, as you know, some of the old barbecue signage is just folk art. It's wonderful. And, you know, they've got one of the neatest old signs in Atlanta is up at the History Center. It's the Auburn Avenue Rib Shack sign. The Auburn Avenue Rib Shack closed back around the time of the Olympics, and the people at the History Center were smart enough to realize that that was a nice, fragrant piece of Atlanta history from the very famous street, Auburn Avenue, and they've got it in their collection up there, beautiful pink neon pig.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So it's going to be, and it's not just going to be about the South or even just about the United States. It's going to be about the history of barbecue and how, I mean, barbecue is cooking over fire and cooking with smoke are just about as universal as it gets. Every culture's done it. But there's really only been one place where it has spawned a huge culture and has an international reputation, and that's in the New World and in the South. And I love the story of barbecue's beginnings here. The first record of a barbecue in the New World is on Columbus's second voyage. Columbus's men stopped at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and they found a bunch of grills, basically, they're sticks set out, lattice work, cooking fish and iguana. Iguanas all over the Caribbean, and that, you know, long before they ever had a pig to cook, they cooked iguana. And the word barbecue is the Spanish explorers trying to come up with It's their version of the word that the Indians, the Taino Indians of the Caribbean, were using for what they, how they were cooking. And then that got anglicized by the English into barbecue. So there, in a nutshell, you have the multicultural roots of this food and of the New World. Atlanta has and has had a lot of really good barbecue places, and there's this great affinity between barbecue and the blues. There was a place on Ponce de Leon for many decades, I've seen the ad for the opening of it in the Constitution in the 1920s, the Pig and Whistle. The Pig and Whistle was on Ponce de Leon, where the Krispy Kreme Donuts is now, and that was a big barbecue drive-in. And one of the people who used to play for tips there was Blind Willie McTell.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Call me back, pal of mine, let me live once again. Call me back to your heart, pal of mine, let me thrill with the charm as I linger in your arm, as I did in those days that have gone by. Let me roam once again down in old Lover's Lane. There I will kiss your lips so divine. Let me gaze in your eyes while I find paradise. Call me back to your heart, pal of mine.
But there was another barbecue drive-in back in the 30s and 40s up in Buckhead called Tidwell's. And Tidwell's was the same kind of thing, but one of the people, there was a musician who was working at Tidwell's who was discovered and made some records, had a very brief career in the late 20s and early 30s, with Barbecue Bob Hicks.
Woke up this morning gown, tricks me night and day. I woke up this morning, tricks me night and day. With my hair around my pillow while my brownie used to lay. I know I ain't good looking, teeth don't shine like pearls. I ain't good looking, teeth don't shine like pearls. So glad good looks don't take you through this way.
But his publicity shot is hilarious because he's wearing a butcher's smock and a little white chef's hat. Not the toque, but a smaller one. And he's got like a guitar out. So he's very literal, Barbecue Bob. He just went right from cleaving the ribs to singing you a song.
Bust dodge my jumper, I'm a overhaul. My brown nun quit me, God knows she had it all.
If you like beer and barbecue, especially together, then you'll love Bob Townsend. Bob has been writing about beer and food for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for well over a decade. His Beer Town column appears in the paper's Thursday food section.
I think the really interesting thing about beer right now is that the beer world has kind of been turned on its head. When we started out, you know, and we were a young country, all of our beer styles obviously came from the old world. Things we drank, the original American beer was probably a porter. You know, that's something that George Washington made and had made for him, you know. But we have now developed our own kind of styles and takes on all those traditional styles. American IPA, using American hops, is a style unto itself. And now, all these young people in Europe are creating these breweries that are doing American-style beers. So it's kind of turned around.
So, it seems like it's a it's a problem in a way, right? And selecting the right thing for at the right time for the right occasion. And let's
yeah, we're not wine drinkers though. We don't spit it out. We swallow it. And
look, I'm a beer drinker too, my friend.
No,
but
here's the deal, though. I do joke around with my colleague Gil, who writes the wine column, and I love wine and I love spirits, but beer to me is just a much more easy beverage. And when you talk about pairing, it's much easier to pair beer and food because beer and food are very natural companions.
Well, let's talk about that with the barbecue. I brought in a number. I just got married 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
A lot of fun. Rehearsal dinner. We did barbecue.
Great.
And I went out and I wanted to buy some beer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know what I like, but I want something that I was hoping would go well with barbecue. And you can tell me how we did here.
Yeah.
And I brought one for you and one for me.
Okay.
So I'll let you do your honors and then I'll do mine. Tell me what we've got.
Well,
and what you might pair it with.
Yeah, well, I think both of these beers that you picked up, one is a nut brown ale from Lay's Magnolia, which is for most of the history of Mississippi, it was the only brewery in Mississippi. Really cool people. Brew really cool beers, but this is their signature beer, so it's actually made with pecan. And, you know, a lot of barbecue is smoked with, you know, fruit woods and things like that. So I think this would make a great companion. It's the nut brown, has a lot of, you know, caramelized flavors, and then the sort of nuttiness in it, I think, makes a really good companion. And then you've got a beer from Great Divide, which is a great brewing company right down in downtown Denver. And this is an interesting beer. It's a rye lager called Haas. And the rye, I think, is really nice because it gives you a little bit of, you know, a little bit of spicy note. You know, if you've had rye whiskey, there's a little that kind of spicy note. So I think that's neat with barbecue as well. And then lagers are just, well-made lagers are nice because they're refreshing. And that's what makes beer so good with food, because of the carbonation. You know, when you're drinking a beer, it really has the ability to reset your palate. You know, it's kind of those scrubbing bubbles. So you take a sip of the beer and then you take another bite of food, and it just kind of creates a really nice... That's why champagne is so good. Let's face it. Champagne and oysters, right?
And it gives you that... Yeah, it gives you a feeling of... It feels like it's right.
That's good beer.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Annie Quattrano, Bob Townsend, and Jim Ockmoody. Of course, I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next month.